There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
Thank you to our subscribers and members of our listening audience.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. Desiree is on assignment. This is podcast number 283, June 11th, 2008. Stephen?
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by Yahoo Ads. Yahoo Ads get you the F1Weekly.com website for the ads that interest you. From Ferrari swag to McLaren caps, Yahoo Ads get you the stuff you really want. Click on them, you know you want to.
Thank you, Yahoo Ads, and of course, keep up the good work, Steven. On today's show, Donica, yes. Donica, no. Can McLaren turn things around? Is BMW a top team? The United States Grand Prix, not fundamental to Bernie. Steven, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Great. How about yourself, Mr. Rogers?
Absolutely wonderful. Whenever I have my tea and the mics are on, I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, it definitely is a mood booster.
Quick memory check of the Canadian Grand Prix, Steven. Did you enjoy it?
Good race. I did like the fact to get to see a new person on the top of the podium. Nice change of pace. And it not so much because of the weather, or it was because of a big shunt, but it was not a shunt on the track, which was really weird.
I thought Kimi Raikkonen's comments about going at 60 kph seems to be a problem for some people, and nothing happens at 200.
Well, yeah. Well, we were talking about that earlier in the week, where basically most of Lewis's problems haven't been, well, he's out on the track. It's basically, you know, things where he's not driving quite so quick that he has his problems.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but interesting stuff. Certainly the podium was exciting. New teams.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah, well, we have seen David Coulthard on the third rung before. But
yes, of course.
But to see BMW holding the top spot. Actually, to not have a Ferrari or a McLaren on the podium, that's got to be like the first time in probably about a year and a half.
I agree. So, no, I thought that was really refreshing, and I believe I predicted that BMW will have a good chance of getting their first win here in Canada, and sure enough, the host was correcto.
Yeah, let's go back to all the Schumacher predictions back 2 years ago. We'll
yeah, but those sure. don't count anymore, Steve. He retired. Once he retires, all the zeros come back to me.
Okay.
Also, real quickly, I was very happy for David Coulthard. Even though I believe he won't be in Formula One next year, I think it was his 62nd podium. He's got really good numbers. He's got wins. He's got numbers for a driver that a lot of people look at as an old geezer and, you know, shouldn't be around anymore. He has good numbers. He's one of the highest Formula One drivers in terms of points. He's up there with a lot of good people. So,
yeah, I think that's going to cement his seat for the season probably with this win, unless he, you know, has another rash of turning into competitors on the track like he was doing earlier in the season. But I think it was a good race for him, good race for Red Bull. Mark Webber had a couple bobbles, which kind of put him back in the field. And David Coulthard was in a position to take advantage of, you know, all of the safety car. And actually, I think he really took advantage of Massa's mistake, Ferrari's mistake in forcing Massa to have that second pit stop, which kind of screwed up Massa's race.
Yeah, exactly. Massa frustrated at this race, especially after what happened in Monaco. I think Ferrari as a team were frustrated, especially with Raikkonen getting knocked out of the race. Luckily, he was being knocked out by his major contender.
Yeah, by his primary competitor.
Exactly. So in the end, it all pans out. But kudos to Robert Kubica. And now that the Camry has pulled up to the front studios, the red carpet is rolling out as we speak, and Nasser is running into the studios. He's running a little bit late. Probably had an appointment at Krispy Kreme. Nasser, welcome to the studios. How are you?
Thank you, sir. Good to be here. How is everybody?
Everybody is wonderful. Your thoughts on the podium in Canada, and I'm sure you'll cover a little bit more in our wonderful Motorsports Mundial.
That I will, sir. Great race, great finish. Enjoyed the race very much. Enjoyed the result even more. And what more can I say?
You could say that you wish Kimi Raikkonen didn't get hit. You love Kimi Raikkonen.
Well, you know, no, I don't love Kimi Raikkonen. I do love the racer in him, that's for sure. And, you know, when that Kimi and Schumacher happened with Lewis, I said, okay, here is Dr. Tyson's dream coming true.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the incident is concerned, I don't want to hear from Kimi or Lewis. The person I want to hear from is Adrian Sutil.
Exactly, because I think I said that in our weekend podcast. Adrian Sutil must have been laughing at the gods.
Exactly.
Thanking the gods. And sure enough, I mean, the irony there is just unbelievable.
Did you enjoy the race, sir?
Absolutely. You know, I did enjoy the late race, but I didn't enjoy the TV coverage of the race. Because unfortunately,
it was the best.
It was the best.
You didn't have to go to 30 minutes of pre-race agony.
No, as a matter of fact, I turned my head and the lights had gone out and they started.
They did the same thing with the Monaco Grand Prix some years ago. And you know, it's so interesting. When I get up at, like a lot of people in California, at 4:30 in the morning, I'm very, very anxious for the race to start. And this time around, when it was in my face, as soon as I turned on the TV, I missed the pre-race and the Peter Windsor pit lane walk and all that.
Exactly. No, it's actually really brutal because you're so accustomed to the grid walk, the pre-race that brings it up, you know, to a crescendo.
But, you know, since you have started this thing on a negative note about dissing on the coverage, I tell you what, after watching following Formula One for 35 years, I really do not want to know on the opening laps, first few laps, that Formula One is not a spec series. Each team must build its own car, which was mentioned. I mean, this is really, really bad coverage for, you know, people like us.
I know.
Yeah, but you've got to figure that they're on broadcast, and you know, some poor NASCAR guy just tuned in and went, "What? What's this?"
Well, that's what they're hoping. They go to the Fox first of all because this is free TV. It's not a cable television. You don't have to pay to get this particular channel. So they're hoping that the other people out there who don't have cable could watch it. Also, I was very happy that they had Bob Varsha, Steve Matchett, and of course my favorite David Hobbs to still keep the consistency, but they do go into educational mode.
Yes.
Well, I have to say to Steve Favre what Bobby Unser used to say to Sam Posey during the 500 broadcast all the time. Steve, you're wrong. They could have waited five laps. It's, you know, 60, 70 laps. You know,
yeah,
that's the point I'm trying to make, you know.
Right, I understand. Yeah, and the timing and everything. But, yeah, they do go into educational mode to teach the little people.
I think if they really want to bring people to Formula One, they need to show that pre-race coverage. That half hour on the grid is something that will draw people in to watch more coverage.
Steve, with reference to these rich NASCAR folks that you refer to, people know in America what Formula One is. They are just not interested in it. It's just like me. I know what baseball is. I don't need an infomercial, but I'm just not interested in it.
I
know what cricket is. I don't want to.
And they could give Formula One a half hour when they give NASCAR like 18 hours.
Yeah, but the problem is NASCAR makes a good point. Not only that, they think that Formula One is frou-frou and uppity, and if they hear Peter Windsor's voice speaking the King's English right away, I think a lot of
they're
people
not interested, and there's nothing wrong with somebody not being interested in a particular thing, to each his own. But interesting you talk about Peter Windsor. You know, on the Wind Tunnel show, and I won't even ask you if you watched that, there was this, he was on the Wind Tunnel show with, and they had on the other line, Daryl Waltrip. And it was so amazing, the mentality of these two people.
They had in promoting Peter Winter and Daryl Waltrip on one show?
Yeah, well, on live video feed, you know, Peter Winter was in
Canada.
Yeah, Canada, thank you, sir. And he was in, I don't know, Cape Cod or wherever he was. But you know, both these people are passionate about their own stuff, and they have their own. The thing is, you know, listen, if you're not interested in Formula One, don't watch it. There's nothing wrong with that, you know. And it's just, you know, when I want to watch a Formula One race, man, I don't want to see Ty Cobb figurines running around. They do that on Fox Sports, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, I want to watch a race, man. Don't feed me baseball, basketball, croquet.
Yeah, don't try to sell me on your other stuff.
Yeah.
Keep up the good work. So we do have to suffer here. We have a couple more or three more races on Fox,
which we will cover a little bit. We have more of that rage of the week. Rage on the race.
But we're still thankful that Bob Varsha, Steve Matchett, and my favorite Formula 5000 driver, David Hobbs, are still on the program.
Oh, absolutely. No, we don't have, I mean, we enjoy what they do. That's not the issue. But it's just the way this thing is being presented is like, you know, please.
I know.
I mean, it's just like no different than it was on ESPN, you know. Races coming, tape delay at 10 o'clock,
yeah.
And you turn it on at 10 o'clock, they're on lap 15 already.
Yeah, if anybody's listening at speed, please take control, broadcast all the races.
Yeah.
Live is how we like it.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, if they want to do it broadcast on Fox, they can still show at the same time. I mean, early morning.
That's what I don't understand.
You can still have the live feed on speed.
Yeah, I mean, you can have the nuts like you and I waking up at 4:30 in the morning with our cup of Joe, and then the people who don't want to wake up, they could watch it tape delayed later on at prime time.
And you know that speed is that they're doing the broadcast at 4 in the morning anyway because the guys are doing their commentary live.
Not only that, but the nuts that wake up at 4:30 in the morning, like you and I, will probably watch it again at 10 o'clock in the morning when they replay the show.
Like my
so
friend.
So double whammy.
Yeah, to borrow a phrase from my friend who's been following Formula One since like what, early 60s, he said, when you can watch a Formula One race live in Uganda and not in California, something is wrong.
Exactly. Something is wrong with this picture. So keep up the good work, NAS. And I also want to congratulate you. Apparently, the luck that you bring to people you interview obviously continues.
Maybe I should interview myself and you.
That no, well, I'm
we'll win something.
That's what's going to happen. I'm telling you. I mean, from the Mexican driver in Formula BMW,
Gutierrez.
I mean, from Bruno Senna, now Mario Tyson. Boom! Right to the top.
Wow.
I mean, it's inexplicable.
Wow.
The power.
The power of F1 Weekly, huh?
Exactly. So I'm pretty impressed with that. Keep up the good work. Other outstanding moments in Canada from both of you?
Nothing else for me.
For me, you know, I got on, I think it was qualifying day. Just before qualifying on Saturday, I got a call from one of our listeners, and it was very nice to talk to Dr. Mark Farrington.
Oh, good.
Obviously, he's been to Canada before, and, you know, he was in Boston for some conference, and so he was really looking forward to it. He was having a great time, and he was telling me that he may go to the Autosport show in January. And as you know, around that time, I have to do my annual civic and social duties and fly back home once a year. So, and I have to go through Europe anyway. You know, Karachi is not in Arizona, as you know. So, are you surprised?
I'm stunned.
Yeah. So I'm thinking of maybe going through Birmingham and been there a couple of times. I've enjoyed my time there immensely at the show. And I met Murray Walker there a couple of years ago. I had a very interesting conversation with him. A lot of people there. I came very close to interviewing Pat Simmons last time, but he had left the stage.
That's too bad. We would have loved that here.
You know, I had, courtesy of F1 Weekly, I had media pass. So I went to this media room, and there was this lady who was calling people on my behalf, see if they are available. And so she showed me this list. She said, who would you like to talk to? And I look at these, and I'm like, wow.
Everybody.
And I says, well, Christian Horner. So, and this was like around 4:30, so she calls. They had the number to all these people. And I don't know if it was him or his crony, known as assistant, who said, oh, we're in the parking lot, leaving now. And then she said, okay, Pat Simmons, you can go. He's in that Renault area. And I kid you not. They had this, you know, Renault company, or whether it was the Formula One operation or UK retail sales, I don't know. And this is what happens when you outsource anything and everything in life. I go there, and it's a pretty big stall. And I said, I'm here to see Pat Simmons. And the girl said, who? I said, Pat Simmons, he's here with your Formula One team. And she said to the other girl, you know, who is this guy? So apparently he was not there at that time.
Yeah, obviously that must have been the UK.
Yeah. No, everything is out. So same thing happened to me. You know, I think it was the very first or second U.S. Grand Prix at Indy. And Arrow's team had a big, you know, like a stall or, you know, where you can go and meet the drivers, whatever. And I went up to this guy. I said, you know, is Jackie Oliver here? He says, who is he?
So that's not good. That doesn't work for you, Nass.
No, I mean, it's, you know, it's the new times. You know, everything is outsourced. Nobody knows anybody.
Exactly.
But, you know, it gives you a good laugh, you know, enjoy the misery.
Yeah. Real quickly, before we go to break, a few things that stand out in my mind. Giancarlo Fisichella kissing that wall so close, and yet it didn't break anything on the car. And at first I was going, shabash, 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 go Fissy. Because I like to see, you know, any driver really trying hard. And then, of course, a few laps later, the spin, and he's out of the race. That was, I felt really terrible for him.
The shabash has even made it to the forum now.
Yeah, exactly. We are taking the shabash on the road, so
wonderful,
to speak.
Wonderful.
Exactly. Also, Sebastian Vettel's excellent drive in the points. I liked his drive because he was really being hounded. Back there, he had Heikki Kovalainen, who really needed to get by.
I have to stop emergency here. 10 minutes into the show, I haven't heard anything about Muy Mucho Hombre de España.
Well, we're getting there. But no, Vettel did an outstanding job.
Talk about Alonso, please.
Okay, Fernando Alonso... another great drive, but I saw his comments. For a minute there, after I saw what happened in the pits, the safety car, and Fernando was right behind Kubica, for a minute there, I thought we might have a miracle on our hand. I thought he would, not a win, but I thought he would make it to the podium. But once again, mistakes. In strategy, and then, of course, he pushed it too hard. And I'm not sure if it was mechanical or he just had a brain fade. But at least he lost it on the track, Nasser.
Yeah. Not in the pit lane?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you very much. I mean, I don't know. Hamilton really needs to knock off the mistakes because he had the weird mistakes last year, almost won the championship, but didn't because of those strange mistakes. And now they're rearing their head again. But this time he takes people out with him. The Montoya factor has stepped into the McLaren garage. I mean, what's going on there, Nass? I want a quick Hamilton comment.
Well, the quick comment, at least he was smart in crashing. He was right. He was supposed to crash into Kubica. And, you know, boom, I'm going to go down with the leader of the championship.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, if he'd been really smart, he would have gotten both.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, right down the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah, so do you think McLaren will be able to get over this? Because even Heikki Kovalainen could not get that final point that Sebastian Vettel
was able
to reel in.
Clark, we all make mistakes. If you really dissect the mistakes, all the great ones made, you'll be surprised. You'll be surprised. Whether it was a Senna, whether it was a Schumacher.
Right.
Remember Hakkinen 1 year when he had the best car, he dropped out. He lost both races in Italy while leading the San Marino and the Italian Monza.
Crying in the bushes.
Crying in the bushes. Yeah, so we all make mistakes.
That was 1999.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
So it's, but you know, it's, and when you're very high profile, it focuses on you.
But that's true. And I think with maturity, Lewis Hamilton will become a much better driver. Nasser is also an accomplished driver in the
Camry.
In the Camry.
Yeah, I won't fit into a TF1.
Exactly. So keep up the good work, Nass. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with Motorsports Mondial. And more tea, of course. And
we have some Clorox also.
We have some Clorox. I forgot to ask you guys about Danica, yes, Danica, no. Danica, yes.
Danica.
Danica, no. Bye, bye, bye. Go,
for
go,
what?
Go. Apparently, there were two headlines today in this morning's website. One said, Danica's got a test, Patrick. She has a test with Honda. And then Nick Fry as soon as he saw that headline, made his own headline, no, we have never agreed to this.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, the first article says that Nick Fry says she's got a test drive in November, and then the next one says she doesn't have a test drive in November. You know, she doesn't have a test drive with us. Which is it, Nick?
It's easy. She's a big girl. I bet you she has a test drive, Steve.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised.
She will have a test drive, and so will, Kyle Busch. You know, these are publicity stunts.
These are publicity stunts. Exactly. Know, fine. There's a lot of money in this, and Honda sells a lot of cars in the South.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Okay, we'll take a quick break. We'll be back with Motorsports Mondial and a goodie bag. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
F1Weekly.com would like to thank our sponsor, San Jose Label Inc. San Jose Label is a custom manufacturer of labels that makes a variety of products. 1-4 color process labels, alphanumeric barcoding and UPC labels, blank labels, serialized asset tags, hazardous labels, bumper stickers, pin feed, static cling, hot stamp labels, and many others. Please go to www.sanjoselabel.com for info, samples requests, and graphic design. Or you can call to telephone 408-436-8221. San Jose Label is the one-stop shop for all your labeling needs.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. Now, before we jump into the segments of all segments in motorsports stuff, real quick reminder, we have an interview coming up. Nico Hülkenberg, outstanding individual. Willie Weber, Schumacher of the future. That's going to be a great interview. Please stay tuned to that. And I want to ask Nasser real quickly. Bernie came out and said the United States Grand Prix, not fundamental to Formula One. And my favorite part of his little quote was, "I'm going east, not west." And I thought that was interesting because that's what he's working on. Korea, Moscow, India. He is going east, young man, isn't he?
Well, first of all, greetings and racing regards from Pocono to Poland, and that's going east also.
So I guess good work.
So I guess the whole world is going east.
You and Bernie.
Yeah, and well, you know, he's following the money. That's all there is to it.
Exactly. It's where the governments are willing to pay him to bring a race to them, whereas if you go west, it's pretty much you've got to pay to play.
And, yeah. And a few moments ago, I interrupted the show because I had to check for an email from the east. So
the far east.
It's pretty much all over for us, isn't it, Matt? Yes.
we'll see. But, you know, nothing is forever. It's a trend. And I still think, not that I wish anything to fail or anybody to fail, but I personally will not be surprised if in a few years Malaysia Grand Prix is no longer there because, you know, a lot of these places you have a change of government, like what happened in India. They were going to have the race in a town called Hyderabad, and the local government realized, they say, hey, we're not going to spend $200 million of taxpayers' money. We have other issues here. And I think they made the right decision. So we'll see. I mean, you know, I respect Bernie for all he has done for motor racing. These
Absolutely.
People, him, Max, they have a passion for motor racing, and I have a lot of respect for that. But, you know, you have to have a race in the United States. You have to have a race in Argentina. Mexico is a huge, huge market. You have to have a race in Australia. The country has produced two world champions. The race is very popular. I mean, big deal if people have to wake up at 2. Somebody has to wake up at 2 or 3 in the morning around the world anyway. You know, and those people who are diehard fans who listen to, you know, our podcasts and other kind of stuff, they will wake up at 2 in the morning. I mean, I'll wake up at any time to.
Yeah.
Man, I don't.
It doesn't really, you know, it doesn't really affect his revenue if they started 2 in the morning or if they started 4 in the afternoon. He's still getting the same paycheck from the television company. They don't pay him a percentage of the advertising they sell.
You know what? What I don't understand about the greed factor. If you have $4 billion stashed away in your Swiss bank account, what's another million or 2 or 6 million? That was the difference between him and Tony Jarre. I just don't get it, you know.
And it's a hobby, you know. That's what they have to do.
A hobby, ego.
Yeah, a trophy. It's basically, or one-upmanship. He's trying to prove that he's better than Tony because he can make Tony do what he wants.
Well, he has a nice big trophy from Slovakia.
Which is important.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of Slovakia, let's spin the globe and go around the world with everybody's favorite segment, Motorsports Mondial, with the King of Karachi, Mr. Nasser Hamid. Nas,
Shukriya.
Welcome back.
Thank you, sir. Well, main and historic news of the weekend was, of course, the Krakow kid cracking the champagne in Montreal. And it's interesting, amazing comeback for him after his terrifying crash in Montreal last year. And more importantly, something that you mentioned on the Sunday show also, it was on the track where BMW scored their first Grand Prix win as an engine supplier in 1982 with Brabham, and also happened to be one of Dr. Mario Tyson's favorite tracks.
Exactly.
Apart from, like you said, two M's, Montreal and Melbourne. Were you pleased with the results, sir?
Oh, I was so pleased with the results, you have no clue. Because I was hoping it would happen soon. And Canada is a perfect place for Kubica to take this win after, of course, the big crash of last year.
I think Kubica should send a bouquet of Polish Poncieras to Lewis Hamilton, not only for their friendship, which goes back to their karting days, but for being so kind in choosing the target at the end of the pit lane.
It truly was a gift.
Yeah. I saw that. I said, oh, man, this is it. This is BMW's first win for sure. And making the day even sweeter was the fact that he also takes the lead in the Drivers' Championship, which is amazing. Hard to believe Ferrari driver is not leading now. But I don't think this will last too long. And teammate Nick Heidfeld was second. And you know where I work? It's a small operation. Most of the ladies there are from Poland. So they are not interested in motor racing, but they're very happy that their homeboy won. And they made it a point to let me know that Germany beat Poland in football, so they're very happy that Polish driver beat the German driver in the Grand Prix.
Excellent. So good news for them.
Yeah, so congratulations to everybody at BMW in Polonia and whoever was happy. It's very good for the sport. Dr. Tyson's prescription is working. Last year they wanted to score points, and they did. They wanted a win this year. They have it now. And the next dosage calls for fighting for championship next year. And they are on the track and right track with a little help from friends like Kimi taking points from Massa, Hecky taking points from Lewis. BMW team could turn into a Munich steamroller. And it will be very good if they start winning on a regular basis. Good for the sport, you know what I mean? Now a little background on Robert Kubica. He is 23 years old and comes from the town of Krakow. This is the same town which produced the famous Polish rally driver of the 60s and 70s, Sobislav Zasada, who was a very big name in those days. Kubica got his racing license at the age of 10 and raced in his native country for 3 years. He then moved to Italy and became the first non-Italian to win the Italian karting championship, which is very impressive. With support from Renault Driver Development Program, he finished second in the 2002 Italian Formula Renault Series. Renault dropped him after a disappointing season in 2004. In 2005, he dominated the World Series by Renault, same series where Heikki Kovalainen comes from. This domination earned him an F1 test with Flavio's team. His impressive showing in his first F1 test led to a contract with BMW within a few weeks. His rapid pace in testing brought an early exit for Jacques Villeneuve, and Kubica made an impressive debut in the Hungarian Grand Prix in 2006, finishing seventh only to be disqualified for car being slightly underweight. And if I remember correctly, the underweight came from excessive tire wear.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's why they pick up the marbles often. You see that after they win the race, they go around picking up the clag, so it adds just enough weight to pass inspection.
Yeah. To make sure it basically is that security blanket for having enough to get past inspection.
Not only that, but you'll notice that all the drivers wear really outlandish large watches.
Yeah, but they usually put those on after they get
No, they put those away. On as they come in, and they put that on when they hit the scales.
And somebody puts rocks in their pockets.
Mm-hmm. Don't laugh. That's happened.
It happened in karting. I read this. I could not believe that. So it just goes to show how badly people want to win.
Well, that was basically the reason that Charlie Whiting came out and they were talking about, you know, hey, don't be touching the drivers after the races.
Yeah.
No hugs because, you know, we don't want you
to. Those are the rules you're not supposed to be touching.
Yeah.
He was on the podium in only his third race at Monza. I was at that race. He will now be a hot commodity on the market and puts him in the driver's seat to negotiate a lucrative contract from his employer, as the present contract is up at the end of this year. And my understanding is that BMW has some sort of a unilateral option. They can renew the contract. But let's see. I hope he stays there because, you know, realistically, you don't want to go to McLaren because Lewis is the man there. You don't want to go to Ferrari. They already have a Kimi Raikkonen there. This is a team, now that he has won, is and he's young and he's very good, is going to wrap around him, you know.
Exactly, that's what he's hoping.
Yeah, that's what he's hoping.
Yeah.
But he just has to be careful, you know, that when if he signs a long-term contract, would be my idea or suggestion, make sure you have some say in who your teammate will be.
I was just going to say.
No, I am telling you.
Even though he came out in the press a few days ago and said that it would be fun to have Fernando Alonso as a teammate.
Yeah, but the fun will wear out very quickly when your new teammate qualifies on the second row and finishes on the podium on his debut. History repeats itself sometimes very badly.
Yeah, no, these guys are friends. They play cards.
Trust me, friends or no friend, you don't want to be beaten by anybody.
I understand. Talk to Nelson Piquet.
Yeah, exactly. He should say, yeah, I'd love to stay with your team, and Nick Heidfeld is just really good. I really get along with him.
Yeah,
yeah, that's how that's the way it goes. And talking of Nick Heidfeld, he is next on my mantra. Yeah. So teammates' victory has brought more pressure on Quick Nick. Unless he can win a race this year, he will be lucky to hang on to his seat for next season, unless he's included in the Kubica clause in the contract. The man from Mönchengladbach is 31 years old, and this is another example, you know, how things can go wrong for a talented driver, and did his first Formula One test over a decade ago with McLaren. He was widely expected to join McLaren to replace the retiring Mika Hakkinen, but a man came in from the cold and took that seat without saying much. And we all know who that is. Which brings us to the man himself, the talented Mr. Raikkonen. For a guy who doesn't talk much, he sure knows how to get his message across, which you already alluded to in the early segment that after this rear end.
As you call it, the schlamazel.
Schlamazel. It's one thing making a mistake at 200 miles per hour, but another at 200 kilometers per hour, I should say, but another at 60 kilometers per hour in the pit lane. And like I said, I'd like to hear from Sutil what he has to say about this incident. Amazing how what goes around comes around, huh?
That's exactly it.
I mean, you think about it. Who would have thought that Sutil, trying to finish fourth, will be taken out by Kimi Raikkonen? And then who would have thought that in the pit lane, Kimi Raikkonen will be rear-ended by Lewis Hamilton? I mean, if it was Kubica or something, you know.
But the irony of it, Kimi Raikkonen is taken out really in a traffic accident in the pits.
Yeah.
Not racing.
Yeah.
Well, the ultimate symmetry will be is if Lewis Hamilton gets rear-ended by Sutil in France.
By Alonso.
That'd be the full circle. Ooh.
No, Fernando Alonso doesn't do silly things like that. He's a professional, master.
No, he just, you know, he discusses tire strategy after the pit stop is over.
Exactly.
Only for 10, 12 seconds.
No, just enough.
Yeah, he's hungry for success. Okay, what are we now? Okay, this is you know, a moment of enlightenment for a racing driver kind of stuff, like
when
Spa 1991.
Flashes,
yeah, you know, Spa 91 qualifying. We all know what happened there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so check this out. First of all, going back to Kimi, I think the European tracks will suit the Ferraris, but Kimi is now facing triple threat to keep his crown. And my money is still on, my 2 rupees are still on Kimi Raikkonen to retain his world championship. Unless he has 2 or 3 in a row DNS. Okay, on a day when their high-profile teammates were going home pointless, both Massa and Kovalainen failed to capitalize. This makes me more convinced, barring DNS, like I said, title fight will be between Kimi and Hemi. But I must say, Massa's move passing those two people, that was muy macho.
That was muy macho.
Yeah. And also his pass on David on Kubica last year in the rain on the last lap. I still cannot believe how he went off course and finished ahead of Kubica. Remember that race?
I do remember that race, but I remember the European Grand Prix just a little bit more.
Oh, that was very awesome, too. I loved that, and I still love it. Because, you know, it's racing. That's what we want.
Exactly.
And the way Massa lost his cool in the... I was watching on YouTube the other day.
Is that on YouTube?
Oh, yeah, of course. Everything is on YouTube now. And both guys...
Everything.
Well, you know, everything motor racing. And
if it isn't owned by FOM.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. A lot of time they take them out.
Yeah.
But you cannot stop people from putting, but they'll take them out, you know, as and when they can. Anyway, DC, it was good to see an old familiar face in the interview room And I think Tricky Dicky called in sick on Monday to celebrate the event.
Monday only?
Or Tuesday too? Yeah. Wow. Two in a row, huh? But with Sebastian Vettel, again, something you brought up early, again in the points and the junior team, I think DC is now a lame duck at Red Bull. He may not be ready to retire, but I think Formula One will retire him. It's called the Ralf Schumacher syndrome.
Yeah, but don't forget, he's had a great career.
Sure.
Even if he's forced out.
And great ladies, too.
He couldn't possibly have any regrets. He should just thank everybody. And he could probably become a great TV commentator for the BBC or what have you.
Oh, dear.
Exactly.
No, he's a nice guy. He always comes across as a nice guy.
Exactly. So
done a lot of races. And if I'm not mistaken, he is the British driver who has scored the most points, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm not sure, but he's up there like fourth or fifth in terms of points.
Oh, then he has
acquired.
To be.
There. Yeah. I mean, he's way up there.
Yeah, so he has to be. So, and he's had a good career. He's had some, the moment in Belgium when in the rain Michael Schumacher ran.
I was at that race.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorites, 98, Spa-Francorchamps.
Yeah, and then he gave Michael the bird in the French Grand Prix, I believe it was.
Correct.
Yeah, so, he's leaving behind a good legacy. And his taste in women, my goodness. Completely el hombre de macho para Escocia, whatever
exactly.
Scotland is
because,
called.
Yeah.
Because. Okay, now we come to the Renault Rotisserie.
Let me turn.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Alonso's pace in qualifying and race continue to fuel the fire. His teammates' time in Formula One is running out. With news, I'm sure you heard this, that Renault is cutting back on staff at Viry-Châtillon, where most of the R&D is done. The two-time world champion may be looking at a long time before he wins his third title. And I really, really think that if he's not at Ferrari in a year or two, it might be quite a few years before he wins the title again. There is definitely no denying of his talents, and it's a shame he is not in the hunt in the championship because he does not have a competitive package. Imagine five drivers fighting for the championship. Wouldn't that be cool?
That'd be sweet.
But
from three different teams.
Fernando came out today saying Renault needs to really think about dropping development on the R28 and thinking about 2009. And if Fernando's saying that, I'm sure engineering is saying that. And I think that might be a smart thing to do.
So now,
because I think 2009 is going to be exciting. No more of these little aerodynamic wings everywhere. We're going back to slicks, no tire warmers. It's going to change the entire scope and strategy of Formula One.
Well, with his 610 that he takes with his with his excess baggage, I mean, if that was not at Renault, I mean, they would be in very bad shape.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if we just had Nelson Piquet and Giancarlo Fisichella,
yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, he was on the second row in Canada pretty much because he has that 610.
As romantic as the French are, and so are you, maybe they should hire Danica Patrick in the team.
Now, I want to make
They'll
sure I pronounce this correctly. It's Danica, not
Danica.
Danica. I apologize to all Ms. Patrick's fans out there in the world.
Yeah, and there are quite a few.
Yeah, I know there are.
A few in this room, too.
Probably.
Okay. I think, we talked about this earlier before the show, Alonso will put more daylight between him and his teammate on European circuits, these fast circuits. And not that I want to see the PK fail. He was doing a pretty decent job, but then he had his usual, spin, a lot of people did.
I think that they're probably going to stay about the same distance apart because Piquet does have some experience on the upcoming tracks. Coming from GP2, at least he's got a little bit of experience on the tracks. I think part of the reasons he's been having so much trouble up to now is because these are new tracks for him.
Excuses.
Now I have to say what he once said a few weeks ago. The co-host has a very open mind. I like that. And I'm not going to argue with him. Okay, now we come to... tell me what you think about this, Mr. Faab and Mr. Rogers. Nico Rosberg, third season in Formula One, will again be winless, most probably. Maybe it's time for a change of scenery. Being a German national might not be a bad idea to replace another German at a German team.
Well, you know what? This is something that came across my mind, but I didn't whisper it to anybody. But I agree with you. Williams has made some steps forward, but I don't think that they've got it as good as BMW. And I agree, a young Nico taking the place of an older Heidfeld is actually very attractive. But, of course, Williams really wants to keep Nico. We heard about this early in the season, well, before the season started with the situation at McLaren replacing Fernando Alonso, and they wanted Nico Rosberg. Apparently that was the rumor, and Nico really wanted to stay at Williams because he listens to his father occasionally, and like Nasser always says, be careful for what you wish for.
That is, I was going to say that thing. You know, what happens if he goes to... See, here's the problem, you know. You go to BMW, let's say the package is working very well, and you cannot run with Kubica.
That's the problem.
You are... In news of the world language, exposed.
Yes.
With your suit on.
I agree. And not only that, but Mario Tyson's a pretty smart guy. And I don't think, and after seeing it, what happened at McLaren in 2007, I think Mario Tyson is going to avoid that scenario. And they're not going to call it a number one and a number two. But I hate to say it, the word team has to come into play.
Yeah, but the thing is, you know, team may not say number one and two, but the... stopwatch may dictate, you know,
exactly.
Make it just like at Renault right now. Your thoughts, Mr. Favre?
It would be nice to see Nico get into a car that he could win with, but I don't necessarily see him going to BMW. I think Williams is going to be willing to pony up quite a bit of money to keep him, just because they know that the only way that they're truly being competitive right now is because he's their driver, he's integrated into the team, he's helped develop that car. But we've also seen Kaz Nakajima come in, and he's been pretty competitive.
Yeah, he's impressed me quite a bit.
And what do you do with Nico? Maybe Nico, this actually may be already exposing Nico as to exactly how talented he is. And one of the things that I've tended to see in Formula One drivers is guys who don't find success really quickly tend to get slower as the years pass, even if their packages get better.
Yeah, the only exception was Nigel Mansell. I never thought this guy was going to win anything because he was there for years and years. And you're so right on this thing. If you do not find success, if you don't make a splash, the problem is not that you get slow. Maybe you get slow in age and all that, but new talent is coming through and
through. Well, I think part of it, too, is you start to lose a little bit of your confidence because you're not the fastest guy on the track anymore.
Kubica himself once said in an interview, I think a few months ago, they were asking about winning in karting because he was very successful in karting and, you know, about racing in Formula One and other series. He says winning is over 50% mentality.
Yeah.
You just have to be in a very strong state of... It's like, you know, like when Kimi Raikkonen went down 26 points, everybody gave up on him, you know, and he came back. And you cannot come back from this kind of thing unless you have supreme faith that you're going to pull it off.
I agree completely.
Okay, now we come to Lewis Hamilton. Of course, he made what in real life is called a mistake. In racing language, it is known as brain fade. Lucky for him, not much damage was done in the point standings, as his victim was his own and main challenger. Looks like the title will go to the man who makes the least mistakes. And as far as Lou Ham is concerned, my message is riding on the back of world champions is not going to help him reach to the top. You know, he ran into the back of Alonso in, I think it was Bahrain, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But on a brighter note.
He only runs, I like it because he's choosy, he only runs into the back of world champions.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed that. Yeah, it's not like Schumacher running in front of Montoya or China.
Or J-Day.
Stuff like that. Who was the guy he had some problem on the warm-up lap in China? I think it was the Dutch guy. Who raced here from Rotterdam? Robert, didn't he collide with him once?
No.
On the warm-up lap in the Chinese Grand Prix.
It's possible.
Yeah. Yeah, at least Lewis has a high taste, you know.
Yeah, very high taste.
So who else is a world champion out there? Better watch out. Stay away from him.
Jacques Villeneuve?
No, who's in Formula 1? In Formula 1, we don't have any other Formula 1.
No, that's it. I was going to say, as long as Lewis doesn't compete in the Le Mans 24 hours, Jacques's okay.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so, but on a brighter note... At least he has the pace and the package.
Well. Absolutely.
The kid is talented.
Not only that, but he's taking advantage of the package that is given to him.
Yeah. And I still think that he's going to win a few races, and so will Kimi.
Oh, absolutely.
It's going to be a duel between these two guys. A final analysis. Formula One has come and gone from North America without paying a visit to the land of milk and honey that is Indy. Let's hope smart, intelligent, and very powerful men of the sport make the return of the U.S. Grand Prix in 2009 news of the world soon. Racing fans want motor racing. We do not want to see our sport in news of the world.
And are they actively seeking a title sponsor for this race to get it back on the calendar? Can you get a title sponsor if you don't already have the race coming?
Well, the biggest problem is the economy in the United States right now is not.
But man, I'll tell you. I mean, let me tell you. The first title sponsor for the very first U.S. Grand Prix was SAP, this German software company.
Right.
Okay, the guy who was their marketing guy who went and worked out the deal with Tony, he worked for a short spell at where I used to work, Prio Software. And I talked to him one day, and I told him, how did this deal come about? And he said, well, you know, their CEO or the founder, Hasso Plattner, I believe is the name of SAP. He's a big racing fan. He said he called us and said, we want to sponsor, and we called. And he said there was no negotiation. They gave us I think the amount he told me was $6 million for like a three-year deal, which was dirt cheap. And
it'd be like you get a year for that right now.
Yeah, and I cannot believe big American corporations that do business worldwide. I mean, forget their influence in IBM, Pepsi, Coca-Cola, that they don't sponsor this thing. You know, even if there is no return on their investment in America, it's worldwide exposure.
Yeah, well,
there's no question about it.
AT&T, Verizon, telecommunications companies in America have plenty of money to burn. I'm surprised one of them isn't stepping up.
Yeah, ExxonMobil is, you know, enjoying $1 billion net profit in a quarter. I mean, what is $6 million for these people? I'm very, very surprised. And it is at Indianapolis, which, you know, it's synonymous with motor racing and hot dogs. Okay, so there we are as far as the U.S. Grand Prix. Maybe we should just call it the U.S. Grand Prix.
That was a Freudian slip.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking the other day, you know, when they used to do the champ cars in Vancouver, Vancouver, Canada, and it was like one of the most popular cities and venues, I was thinking maybe they should just do the U.S. Grand Prix in Vancouver. You know, a lot of people will come.
I think they should do it in Dijon-Prenois.
No, that won't go very well in Crawford. But Puerto Rico would – a street race in Puerto Rico, I would love it.
Well, I'll go.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, it's U.S. territory, and we have Buscaburas is there, right? We have listeners there, and I know there's a lot of passion in Puerto Rico and that part of Caribbean for motor racing. You know, they used to have a Grand Prix in Cuba. So we'll see. But, you know, I've heard on the broadcast from Peter Windsor that they expect a decision of the U.S. Grand Prix in the next week or two. So hopefully,
well, probably for next year's calendar, they would have to make that decision in the next month.
Exactly. Okay, now we're going to go from racing on four wheels to racing on two wheels. MotoGP, local boy Danny Pedrosa wins the Catalunya Grand Prix at Barcelona. Valentino Rossi was second and Casey Stoner third. This is the second MotoGP in Spain this year, and both were won by Danny Pedrosa, and Rossi is still leading the championship. British Formula 3 from Snetterton, big day for French manufacturer Migal. I hope I'm not screwing up the name too much. Their Irish driver Michael Devaney won both races of the weekend. In race one, he finished ahead of Jaime Alguersuari, who could be the next Alonso from Spain. He was second, and Brendan Hartley of New Zealand was third, and Brendan Hartley could be the next big thing from New Zealand. And Hartley is part of the Red Bull driver development program. Mr. Favre, have you ever seen his photo?
No, I can't say that I have. Is this the one that he's...
The Tom Petty lookalike.
Oh, no,
he's got long blonde hair. And I'm told from a very reliable, actually from Mr. Howden Ganley, whom we interviewed, who is also from New Zealand, who lives here. I had asked him if he knew Hartley, Brendan Hartley. He says, yeah, I met him in New Zealand a few months ago. And he says he mentioned to him that he should get a haircut. He says, no, Dr. Marco told him not to do that. Because they like that, you know. Rock and roll image.
Yeah, exactly.
In race two, Devaney was followed in second place by Swedish driver Sebastian Hoenthal with Alguersuari in third. And this is the first time since the British Formula 3 race at Mondello Park in 2005 that a non-Dallara chassis has won a race. Migal is, I understand, some sort of a spider, and the company is based at Manicours, and their website is www.mygale-cars.com. And the next race in the British F3 series is on June 29th at Truxton. Now we move from one track in England to another, Silverstone World Series by Renault Race 1. Impressive win by Mexican Salvador Duran. Marcos Martinez was second and Alvaro Barba third. Race 2, long-awaited first win for talented Canadian driver Robert Wickens. And this goes back to what you were saying. The guys who are good, they need to win quickly, and this guy is in the series and is
if for no other reasons for confidence.
Absolutely. Dutchman Guido van der Garde was second, and Salvador Duran third. Wickens, as I said, is a pretty competitive guy and very good driver, and I do expect him to be in Formula One in a few years, and we wish him all the best. IRL, Indy Racing League, Dixon does Dallas. Scott Dixon takes his first win at the Texas Motor Speedway. Elio Castroneves was second ahead of Penske teammate Ryan Briscoe. Dan Weldon had a big accident in practice but came back to finish fourth. Perhaps the answer will be favorable. Did you catch any of this?
I didn't catch any of that. I watched a bit of the Grand Am race.
Okay, we're coming to that. Late in the IRL race, there was a crash between Ryan Hunter-Reay and Marco Andretti. Both of them were running very strong, and it's one of those racing incidents took both them out. Now we come to Grand Am from the Glen. Scott Truett and Memo Rojas in their Lexus-powered Riley were the winners. Fourth win of the season for the Ganassi Gringo and Memo. David Donahue and Darren Law were second in their Porsche-powered Riley. From the Glen, we go to Land Down Under, an Australian V8 series at Sandown. Jamie Wincup won two of the three races in his Ford Falcon. In race one, he was followed by fellow Ford drivers Mark Winterbottom, also known as Frosty, who was second, and Craig Lowndes in third. Craig was the winner in the second race. Shane Van Gisbergen was second and Wincup third, all flying high in Falcons. Not a good weekend for GM. Final race of the weekend saw another all-Ford podium, Wincup followed by Winterbottom in second and James Courtney in third.
Wow. Pretty much a shutout on the...
Very impressive by Ford drivers. Now we come to Clark Rogers' favorite series, Le NASCAR. Casey Kane wins in Keystone State, driving the number 9 Budweiser car. The kid from Washington State wins the Sprint Cup race at Pocono in his Dodge, and this was his 9th win in the Cup Series. Toyotas were second and third with Brian Vickers and Denny Hamlin, respectively. Now we come to their second-tier racing, or their feeder series, Nationwide, previously known as Busch Series. First win for young Brad Keselowski, man on a mission from Michigan. Race took place in Nashville, and with the winner receiving a brand new Gibson guitar, Brad can now sing a new tune. I'd like to hear his version of The Night Lights Went Out in Georgia, one of my favorite Southern songs, along with Delta Dawn. Did you catch any of the NASCAR action?
I got a little bit of the Nationwide Series race. Typical NASCAR race, roundy round, car crashes, everybody pits.
Yeah.
Roundy round. Somebody crashes, everybody pits.
How many cautions did you count?
I think there were at least two in about 45 minutes to an hour that I was watching. I have a hard time getting, we're playing for track position. Or, no, we just took two tires this time. We're trying to get out of the pits quick. Not so much racing as almost too much strategy sometimes. They almost like... we know there's going to be another caution before the race is over. It's like, how do you know there's going to be another caution?
Well, it's very simple. If somebody has a 10-second lead, there will be a caution.
Yeah.
So they can create what Nelson Piquet would call artificial excitement.
Yeah, the competition caution.
Yeah. Oh, that's classic competition
caution.
Those
I hate. Mm.
Yeah. If you go to Speed TV's website, you will see that U.S. Navy has a Dale Jr. division. Now it will be very hard for Kyle Busch or Tony Stewart to U-Boat Junior's career. even though it has been submerged for 2 years, he hasn't won a race.
Yeah, but he's still bringing in the bucks.
Oh, yeah, big bucks. Now we come to our Clorox corner, the beach, the best in bleach. And, we were talking about the coverage, how it was messed up. I mean, we have to be thankful at least we have something. But, it's amazing how this network is changing. I'm talking about Speed TV, folks. Please enjoy the new series called Wrecked. They're doing a lot of advertising for this series.
Yeah, I've seen the ad.
Has it already started or is coming up soon?
I think it starts like in the next 2 weeks or something.
Lovely.
Towards the end of the month.
And Wrecked, it's not about racing accidents like, and they walked away kind of series.
Yeah.
This is amazing. This is behind the scene look at the towing industry. What's next? The Drano Diaries on the road with Roto-Rooter?
Yeah, well, that's a good possibility, but probably not on this particular network.
Oh, no, you never know the way things are going down. Speed Vision, the network started by ex-ESPN executive Roger Werner with visions of road racing and documentaries on Colin Chapman, the Silver Arrows, and Alfa Romeo, is now living the low life in pinks. Werner's vision is now wrecked. Yeah, French Grand Prix and other, as you said, another two more races, they are going to be tape delayed by 5 hours, but school bus demolition derby can be seen on prime time. How rude to treat the road racing fans like this.
Yeah, it bothers me in a regard that, you know, this is speed TV. All you have to do is throw a car in it and you can get a reality series. And I'm not a big fan of reality television because I think it's still contrived. I'd rather see a well-written drama than see reality TV. So it just, it, especially stuff like Living the Low Life, I'm surprised they haven't picked up American Chopper and Pimp My Ride.
You know, I mean, I have no problem with anything. There's a market for everything, and people have the right to like whatever they like, whatever it may be. But, you know, the thing is, have you ever looked at their schedule? It's Pinks, Pinks, Living Low Life. I mean,
yeah, to me, it's a lot of junk TV.
Yeah,
and a lot of it's geared towards a younger audience and not towards what amounts to classic race fans, you know, people who grew up watching races in the 70s and 80s when these guys were not making anything and were still putting their life on the line every weekend.
Yeah. But what are you going to do? We can at least just express our little sadness.
We have our little forum here that we can spill our...
Okay, so shall we move on to the next agenda, which is the brief part two of the Canadian Grand Prix?
Actually, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back for that.
Okay, I'm ready for some maple syrup.
We'll be back after these brief messages.
Our shout-outs last week, let's get through them now. The podcasters at F1Weekly.com.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now for part two of the history of the Canadian Grand Prix. And let's remind everybody, the Nico Hülkenberg interview with Nasser Hamid is coming up after this segment. Nasser?
Okay, sir. Hello again to everybody. Last week we did the history of Canadian Grand Prix up to first 25 years up to 1982. So we're just going to finish off with some brief highlights since then. Not every year, but some important ones. First of all, I would like to thank Iceman on the forum for sending me an email regarding the 1982 Canadian race and the season. He pointed out, very rightly so, that race winner Nelson Piquet had a BMW turbo engine, while teammate Ricardo Patrese had Cosworth power. Using two different engines at the same time has happened before, but very rare. And my thanks to Iceman for listening and writing. We always appreciate more info.
And that's a very good piece of information.
Yeah, absolutely. And now we will look at some other moments from Montreal. 1983, Eddie Cheever finished second in his Renault behind the race-winning Ferrari of René Arnoux. Ex-motorcycle champion Johnny Chicardo from Venezuela failed to finish the race. His son, with the same name, is now racing cars in junior formula in Europa, which is very interesting. 1985, a Ferrari 1-2 with Alboreto winning over Stefan Johansson. 1986 winner was Nigel Mansell in the Williams Honda over Prost in McLaren TAG Tag Porsche. No race in 1987, and the 1988 version was Senna over his McLaren teammate and good friend Alain Prost. In 1989, Senna was set to repeat as winner, but three laps from the end, his engine was, in NASCAR language, done blowed up. This allowed Belgian Thierry Boutsen to score the first win for Renault-powered Williams. Italian teammate Riccardo Patrese was second, and fellow Italian Andrea De Cesaris third in the Lada. And due to time constraints, we wave goodbye with the costliest wave in Formula One ever. The 1991 Canadian Grand Prix was dominated by our beloved Nigel Mansell, who started waving. I will never forget this. He started waving to the crowd on the final lap. The revs dropped too low, and the car stalled, or as he explained, he could not select a gear. Mansell's misery was Piquet's glory, who took the win in his Benetton. Were you watching this race live?
No.
Oh, it was unbelievable, unbelievable. And you know this guy, what's his name, Björn Wertheim from Sweden?
Mm.
Same thing happened to him a few years ago in the, of all the places, Monaco F3 race, or whatever it was called, Formula 3000 or GP2. But anyway, some years ago he was just a few moments away from taking the checkered flag, and he started waving, and the guy in second passed him and won the race. So waving before the checkered is not recommended. Okay, now here, this is the best part of this race. Man finishing fifth in this race, Belgian Bertrand Gachot. would play a major role in the history of motor racing. Later in the season, he would spray mace in the face of a bobby in England and was thrown in jail. Unable to take part in the forthcoming home Grand Prix at Spa, his team hired an unknown in F1 to drive the beautiful green 7-Up Jordan. Soon, all hell broke loose. And soon, Monday morning, we're talking the next day, and the Piranha Club of Flavio and Weber had their catch of the day. I say thank you, Payne Weber, thank you, Bertrand Gasho, and thank you, our listeners, for listening.
Keep up the good work, Nass. And now, the interview with the German driver, Nico Hülkenberg, who's done great in A1GP, who's gotten a fantastic manager, very well known. Nass, interview is yours.
Okay, sir. This interview, as you said, is with Nico Hülkenberg, 20 years old. Nico is competing this year in F3 Euro Series and was a race winner at Mugello in April, where this conversation took place. Nico is in good hands of Herr Willy Weber, and we all know he was manager to, or is manager to, Michael Schumacher also. And if you are talented and well represented, you can go very far, as we have seen. Nico was born on August 19, 1987. After winning karting championships in Italy and Germany, he made his motor racing debut in style. He was on the Steve Farr program, winning the Formula BMW Germany Championship in his rookie year with Josef Kaufmann Racing. In 20 races, he scored 8 wins, 9 pole positions, and 14 podium finishes. In 2006 and 7 A1GP competition, he won his very first race in the opening round at Zandvoort, and with 8 other wins, helped Germany win the World Cup of Motorsports. Last year, he also won the prestigious Zandvoort Masters of F3, which took place at Zolder. You have to watch this kid in the rain. Currently, he is also a test driver for Williams, and we look forward to his arrival in Formula One soon. And this is very important. My thanks to Lars Kaufmann and our listener Mo Manzoor for making this interview possible, and to Peter Nygaard and Grand Prix Foto from Denmark for arranging Media Pass for me. So a lot of people are helping us, and we appreciate that very much. Please enjoy the interview, and my thanks to Nico Hülkenberg for his time. Danke schön. Okay, I'm here with one of my favorite young drivers, Mr. Nico Hülkenberg, and we are in Mugello. Nico, congratulations on winning the race one. How are you today, sir?
Not bad. After win, I think everybody's happy, and I'm feeling fine, and it's a good feeling to win this race today.
You won your first championship in karting at the age of 13. Please tell us, how long were you in karting and your best karting memories?
I've done karting for like 10 years. Started when I was 7, stopped when I was 18, and moved to Formula cars. But memories, I have a lot of good memories because we were able to win a lot of championships. And I won the Italian championship in the junior class. Good memories from that. I have a lot of nice memories because that was a nice time. I spent a lot of time in Italy in my youth, and I can't tell you what is my favorite memory.
Do you speak Italian also?
I did speak some words, but now I've lost some, yeah.
Okay. What is the most important thing you learn in karting that helps you in motor racing?
I think really the racing. It teaches you really how you race, because the races are very hard, and the races are very aggressive, and really need to fight a lot. And even, you know, sometimes they touch each other, and karting just teach you a lot about racing, I guess.
Okay. Who were some of the karters you raced against, and who do you respect as good racers?
In karting, I raced against a lot of people, like experienced very old. Old man in karting is like Faure or Sauro Cesetti, and very experienced drivers who did like 20, 25 years of karting, which were very experienced. And to race against them was really helpful and teach me a lot.
And among the drivers who are young like you and who have also moved into single-seaters, who were the karters who impressed you?
I did a lot of fights with Sebastian Buemi in juniors, and then Not so much in Formula A, but in karting, I had a lot of fights with Plowman, Buemi, Oaks, and all these drivers also moved on to motorsport, and I still see them now here on the track.
You know, you mentioned Sebastian Buemi. Lars laughed and said to me, make sure you ask Hülkenberg about his best friend. And I said, who's his best friend? He says, Buemi. Is that true?
Who said it? Lars?
Lars Kaufmann.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes, yeah. No, I think I like Buemi. He's a nice guy, and we can have some hard fight on track, but you know, after we can speak normally to each other. So I think I respect him, and I know his talents. He's very quick, and I just kind of like him. Yeah.
2005 was your first year in motor racing, and what a year it was. You won the BMW Championship, Formula BMW Germany, 8 wins, 9 poles, and 14 podium finishes. What was the secret to your success in your rookie season?
A good team, I guess. I really learned a lot from the team of Josef Kaufmann and his son, because they really gave me all their experience and gave me a lot of hints and tips to have a better season. And I think we had a very, very good team, and we worked very well together. And often I went to the team, stayed at their house, slept together with them or in the house, and we spent a lot of time together. And I think that was really the key of the success in that year.
Okay, now somebody like me who has never driven a race car, explain to me, you have the speed and you learn a lot of things from people like Kaufmann's. What are the things a driver can learn apart from the speed from a team owner or people around him?
Well, a lot of things. Just if you start racing, especially racing in Formula cars, anything is new. You don't know anything about braking, downshifting. You got to learn anything from the very peak. And Josef is very experienced also, because he's driven himself in his younger days. And he just was able to give me a lot of tips and made me learning quicker.
Very good. You also won the 2005 Formula BMW World Finals in Bahrain, at least on the track. Tell us why you were given the 10-second penalty.
Because there was an accident happened in the back of the field when I did the restart. And the stewards decided that it was my mistake why that accident happened, so they penalized me with a 10 seconds penalty.
Do you think the penalty was fair, and how disappointed were you as it took away an opportunity to drive a Formula One car?
For sure, very disappointed.
Be honest with me, did you cry?
Yeah, I did. For sure. Yeah, because I was very young, and it was really, really frustrating, because I spoke already to Tyson, and he said, okay, Formula One test, you come along, we make a seat. And then half an hour later, I was with the stewards, and they told me, you're penalized, you're only P3. And I was like, oh, shit, for sure. But it's hard to say, you know. The penalization on one side is correct, on the other side, not. But it's a difficult decision, but okay, I accept it.
Okay. In 2006, you move up to German Formula 3 and started the first two races from pole position at Oschersleben. What are the main differences between Formula BMW and German Formula 3 car, and does it require different techniques of driving?
Cars are different because it's Formula 3 is more powerful. There's a lot more aerodynamic working also in slow speed corners than in BMW. In BMW you have a lot of mechanical grip. I think it's a very good car to start your racing career, because it teaches you a lot about motorsport, about Formula cars. That's it.
2007, and this is where I really got interested in your career. You won your very first race in A1 GP competition and never looked back. And like I said to you earlier, the race I remember was the race at Sepang in the rain. And same year you won the Zandvoort Masters of Formula 3 at Zolder. What makes you so damn good in the rain? And that you are, I know.
I don't know if I'm so good. I think at that day we had a very good. I made a very good setup together with my engineer. We just took the right decision, because it was in Malaysia, and you never know, is it gonna rain and drying 10 minutes later or not. But we decided in the wrong direction, in the right direction, and took a rain setup. And I don't know about the other people, but I think also part of it is just that I really like to drive in the wet, because when I started karting, we did a lot of karting and running in Holland. And in the mini class in Holland, they don't have rain tires, so we had slick tires. And when it was raining, we kept slicks on, and it was very slippery. And it, you know, maybe I got the feeling for rain there.
Very good. It was an incredible performance. What stage in your career did Herr Willy Weber came into the scene?
That was the end of 2006. We got in touch because he asked me to do a test in his A1 Team Germany in Silverstone before the season. And that's how we got in touch.
How is he to deal with on a personal basis?
Willy is a really, really nice guy. I enjoy working with him. He has a lot of understanding of motorsport, and he really knows how this business works. And it's good to have a guy like Willy on the side, and he supports me really a lot.
Now, he has another German driver who retired a few years ago, Has that guy ever invited you over to his house for some, Hungarian goulash or some Beck's beer?
No, not yet.
Do you expect him to?
No, I don't.
Michael Schumacher gave you the award when you won the Team Germany won the championship. Have you had a chance to talk to him, like one-on-one?
Yeah, sure. But I knew him even from before. I've talked to him before. But even on that evening, we spoke quite a few sentences, and I think Michael is also a nice guy.
Have you ever asked him for some driving tips?
No.
Okay. You are now a test driver for Williams. How do you find the atmosphere in an old guard Formula One team?
Very, very, very nice, to be honest. F1 is not easy because the team is very big. There are like 60, 70 people on the test team. Mm-hmm. And first it's difficult to get in touch with everybody and to remember their name on when you return back on track the next day. But I think, they received me, when I went there. They were very a warm welcome from their side, and I really feel like comfortable and at home with them.
Patrick Head has a reputation for being very tough on his drivers, and this can be verified from Alex Zanardi and Heinz Harald Frentzen, especially when it comes to driver feedback. What is your experience in dealing with him so far?
When I met him first, it was very very relaxed and very good. We had a good conversation, and I thought he was a nice guy.
Now, Lars Kaufmann, your team owner's son, told me that you have two interests, your interest in motor racing is matched only by your interest in girls. So my question is, who is cuter, Danica Patrick or Susie Stoddard?
To be honest, I've never seen Danica Patrick in real life, so only on pictures, so I don't know really, but Susie is good looking, for sure.
Okay, good. Looking ahead, what is the plan for 2009?
That's really depending on this year, how everything goes and what options we got at the end of the year. But the performance of this year will make the decision for next year, and which option I get, maybe or GP2 or maybe something else, I don't know. But I think GP2 is a very possible or high chance to do that.
You are knocking on Formula One's door. Let me ask you a question. As a very talented young driver with a tremendous track record, would you like to be racing in Formula One when you get to Formula One, or would you be open to like doing more testing for a team, a top line team? And Williams is a top line team, I would say, but just not having the success McLaren or Ferrari are having. What is your take on how you enter Formula One?
Well, sure, I want to race at one point, but I also give myself the time to prepare for Formula One, because when you move into Formula One, you really got to be ready for it. If you go there and the others beat you and you're last all the time, It's no good advertising for yourself. So I wait and prepare myself in Euro Series, GP2, or whatever is necessary. And when I feel I'm ready for it, then I will try to get a Formula One drive.
I was listening to an interview from Robert Kubica recently, and he said that winning is more than 50% thinking mentality. How much important is the positive attitude in having a successful racing career?
I think very, very important. He's right, because a race can be decided by mentally. You need to be mentally very strong, and not only if you have somebody behind you and you're not allowed to make mistakes, but also otherwise you need to be very positive. You need to deal with your team with, 50 different types of character. And yeah, just mentally it's very, very important to be strong and to be always in a good mood and to be just happy with what you're doing.
Can you tell us personally about yourself? You're from Emmerich, right, in Germany. Where is the town located, and what kind of music you like? Just a little personal things that you would like the world to know about you.
Emmerich is close to Düsseldorf or Cologne, and it's very close to the Dutch border, actually, just 2-3 kilometers. It's not too big. It's like 30,000-40,000 people. It's very like green and a lot of fields with cows. It's not so exciting. Otherwise, I listen to pretty much every music, but also favorites a bit, like dance, trance, or house music and R&B. And otherwise, if I'm not racing, I like to do sports and also just to chill out with friends or go to the cinema and do some nice stuff.
Okay. We do this podcast from California. Have you been to the U.S., and do you follow any American racing series?
I've never been to USA. I'm following, if I have time and it's on TV, I look sometimes the IIL or Chemcar, yeah.
Okay. Any interest in Lynn Escar?
Not really, to be honest.
Good. We like you even more now. Final question, request a message for listeners of F1 Weekly. And we have listeners in Germany also, so if you could say a few words in Deutsches language, we will appreciate.
What do you want to know then in German? What should I say?
Anything you want to say to Deutschen folks.
To Deutschen fans, yeah. Freut mich, dass ihr das hier angehört habt. Habe das Interview gerne durchgeführt und vielleicht sehen wir uns wieder. Ich werde immer Gas geben und mein Bestes tun. Ciao.
And last question, and also a request. When you get to Formula One, will you give F1 Weekly another set of 15 minutes, please?
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you very much.
Nico, thanks very much for joining F1Weekly.com. And now let's go into the wrap-up. Real quick word from Nasser. I want to know what's going on with Can-Am, the Speed Odyssey, available soon. We're reaching the middle of June. Any news?
We are reaching and waiting with anticipation. And as soon as I have any update, the gentleman, Robert Nevison, told me it should be available to anybody. Right now it's not available anywhere. This he has assured me, and he said he will make sure that we get at least some sort of a shipment to ship out on the orders we have received. And we want to thank the people who have placed the orders and also in some cases sent the money. And so as soon as we have them, it will be shipped out priority mail. And we will, if there's for any reason, you know, I don't have any control when it will be released, but if there's any delay, any further delay, I will be the first to let everybody know.
Exactly, and we could put a message on the front page or something.
No, we'll mention here also, absolutely, because we and we cannot have this thing go on, delay. So it should be out pretty soon because, you know, if you want to sell a product, now is the time.
Exactly. Thank you, Nas. Keep up the good work. I want to read a quick WRC update from last week's Acropolis win by Citroën and, of course, Mr. Sebastian Loeb. Shocking, but yes, it's true. Citroën has done it again, and, of course, one of our listeners is an outstanding WRC reporter. The much-anticipated new Subaru made its WRC debut last weekend. Through Subaru's number two driver, Chris Atkinson, has been on a roll in the old car, currently third in points. Subaru's number one man, former world champion, Petter Hollywood Solberg, has been in a slump for the last couple of years. Well, the new car let Chris down on day one. He experienced an electrical gremlin that forced his retirement after the car wouldn't restart between stages. Chris rejoined the event under Super Rally rules to crash out later in the event. No points for the Australian. Petter, on the other hand, could have only done better if he had beaten the Citroën of Sebastian Loeb, but he could not. To bring a new car into the second step of the box the first time out was quite an achievement for Mr. Hollywood. His near-perfect weekend was only dampened by his older brother's electrical problems that saw Henning Solberg in the B-Team Ford drop from a strong third on the final day to finish 8th and only gain 1 point. Had he held on, would have been the first time siblings had ever shared a WRC podium. The notoriously rough roads of Acropolis were car breakers as usual, with multiple teams suffering electrical issues and both Fords, Latvala, as well as Citroën's Sordo throwing away overall leads to punctures. Sordo ending up 5th, and Latvia 7th. The big story again was Citroën and Loeb on the top of the box. 41 WRC victories for Loeb and 47 for Citroën. 47 ties Citroën with the 1980s and 90s powerhouse Subaru's record of overall WRC wins. Not bad for a team that has only been in the modern game since 2002. Vive la France, J Streets. Keep up the good work. Real quickly, I want to thank and give a quick shout out to, of course, our friends at San Francisco Formula One Group. You can see them at www.sff1.com. We'll keep you posted on their latest meetups. And you can also call if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, Overtime Sports Bar and Grill at 398 7th at Harrison, area code 415-863-1688. If you're in San Francisco and you want to catch the Formula One race and your hotel doesn't have good cable. We want to mention our MySpace site, myspace.com/F1Weekly. Check us out and add us as a friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@F1Weekly.com. Thanks, everyone, for making this show possible. Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.